are back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield. I am a Tacoma cannabis activist, researcher, and educator, and I am joined by my co-host, who is a veteran medical cannabis grower and podcast out of Southern Oregon, Uncle Dig. How are you doing today, Uncle Dig?
Hey, I'm doing great today, Lucas. We're having a little break in the autumn weather, and the sun's shining through my window. It's a beautiful, if not a little cold, day.
Oh, wow. And it is crazy weather here yesterday and a couple days before. We had, apparently, they set a tornado warning, although this morning I heard on the news it never quite got to that point. But we had sideways blowing rain for like 2 days, past couple days. It was really some wild weather, even for Washington standards. My wife was saying up in Federal Way, like the sky got like pitch black dark. And I'm like, yep, that's tornado weather. Oof. And yeah. It's kind of like you see those thunderstorms coming in down south. It's just the sky is just like pitch black. You get the lightning going in the wind. But, you know, in Washington State, I've always said this is the craziest place because it'll be like freezing cold and raining. And so, yeah, it'd be like in the upper 30s and pouring down rain. So we are hopefully moving past. Well, actually, that we're moving right into that time of year. So what am I talking about moving past it? Two things before we get going here, Dig. We have some guests coming up later to talk about CO2 extraction. All right, so we're going to get into our news today. And we have some good news and some bad news like we always do. And we are going to start out today. What was our first story, Dig?
It was out of the marijuana moments. It's a general federal ruling. The Biden administration will continue to deny public housing over cannabis despite a request from a congresswoman. So what happened was a congress lady sent a request to the Biden administration for HUD to allow some to stop denying PUD to people who have used cannabis or have used legal forms of cannabis. So Eleanor Norton submitted a request to HUD, which is the Department of the Federal Government that controls affordable housing, to allow cannabis people to use their cannabis in federal housing with no penalty. Mm-hmm. And that was denied by HUD, even in legal states. And this is why federal legalization is important, because people who rely on federal aid like HUD, or, you know, people who pay rent in federal assisted housing, can't enjoy cannabis like people who rent privately or who own their own property because of this federal prohibition. It's very important that we codify cannabis as legal standing at a federal level if we want people to be able to use cannabis equally across the board, because right now we don't even have equity of access because of some of the conflict between state and federal laws. Now, some of these conflicts I understand are always going to be there, but you should be able to consume cannabis on a balcony in any apartment that you pay rent for in this fine country. And that's my personal opinion. And I think it should be yours too.
Yeah, and I can understand people who own houses or HUD or anybody saying, hey, maybe we don't want to smoke indoors and things like that because of, you know, the smoke can cause, I don't want to say damage, but it can leave a smell and things like that. So I do understand that point, although I think that is probably overhyped a little bit. But like you were saying, on a balcony or even if you had a vaporizer, like I don't even think they'll let you even use a vaporizer and things like that. And so what this does, like you were saying, it really sets up an inequitable system where some people get to use medical cannabis and some people don't. And that is not really where we want to be as a society. We want to have equitable access to cannabis all the way across the board. And like you said, I think federal legalization would help out with this. And it's just one of those things. It's like a no-brainer for the Democratic Party. You know, you would expect something like this from like Ben Carson and the Trump administration, but we would hope that the Biden administration would start rolling some of these things back to pave the way for federal legalization. So a lot of these agencies do make regulations like this for other topics that kind of pave the way to change the laws. But in this case, the Biden administration has chosen not to allow people to consume cannabis in HUD-sponsored apartments. And we really could change that. So call your congressman, call somebody, and let them know that this is something that we really want to change. And speaking of things we really want to change, this next story affects a whole lot of people. Dig, and I was telling you before the show, I'm not really sure how, but I have a lot of friends who are veterans, and I have a lot of friends who are veterans and use medical cannabis, including yourself. And so this next story really hits home for me and a lot of people, and that is the Veteran Administration is still dragging their feet when it comes to cannabis research. So I know you're a veteran and you have a lot of experience with this, or some experience with this. So tell us what is happening over at the Veterans Administration, aka the VA, when it comes to cannabis.
So basically, long story, very, very short. The VA rejected a cannabis research request to do plant-derived cannabis. So the VA is going to roll out a couple of studies over the next few years, one in 2022 and one in 2024, involving synthetically derived, right? Not plant-based, not plant-derived, synthetically derived THC and synthetically derived CBD in a limited clinical trial. Now, what veterans have been pushing for, me included, is the VA to embrace whole plant medicine, and if not whole plant medicine, at least plant-derived medicine. This has been a non-starter. This is a problem because a lot of veterans are trying to access state medical cannabis systems, and they can't get a recommendation from their VA doctor because it's illegal, and the VA continues said, well, there's no studies.
Yep, that's what you
hear. Well, first of all, there are studies. There's just not, you know, FDA-approved studies from this country. We can go to studies in Germany. We can go to studies in Israel, of all places.
Spain.
Spain's got a lot of good studies. But the VA needs federal study, and we know that the federal system is behind the times as far as researching cannabis. This has caused undue harm to veterans who, if you want a medical recommendation, you have to go to a doctor outside the VA and pay exorbitant medical prices just to have a doctor tell you something you know already. Now, a lot of states offer some help getting your medical card if you're a veteran, whether a discount on fees or grower fees or whatever, but this inability to talk to your primary about cannabis use, some veterans want to talk to their doctor about their cannabis use, and they're afraid to because they worry that the VA might retaliate. Now, I have told my VA doctor about my cannabis use, and I've so far nothing bad has happened to me. But other veterans have been subject to a bit of harassment in the past because of their cannabis use. Historically, the VA used to make people sign pain contracts when they would get opiate medication. And if the veteran tried to use cannabis, they would shut off the other medication.
Uh-huh.
And then let the guy dry out. It was really messed up. But also what this thing is right now we know that cannabis can help veterans with PTSD and stuff, but there are certain populations researchers think that cannabis might not be good for. And we're unable to screen for those populations because we can't have an honest conversation with our doctors. You know, maybe someone with certain mental conditions shouldn't use certain types of cannabis. We're not going to figure that out if we can't allow the VA to do research. And before people say, oh, but what about the private research? I know that there's this myth in America of private research leading the way on certain medical stuff, but in medicine that doesn't really make anyone money, i.e. trauma care, certain kinds of low cost medication, the VA and the federal government has led the way historically and even continues to lead the way historically in some of these therapies, either by funding the research or actually conducting it in organizations like the VA, the FDA, the Department of Agriculture. Without this research, our private system could not function and would not be generating the research that a lot of people would have you believe they would. It is vastly important that the federal government be allowed to do unfettered research on cannabis. And until that happens, it's going to hurt vulnerable populations. Poor people, veterans, and other vulnerable populations are going to have limited access, whereas people who are more privileged are going to have, you know, safe and open access. And that's not what should be going on in this country.
Yeah, and sadly, I think these first two stories really show maybe how far we are away from legalization when it comes to cannabis on the federal level. Because both of these hinge on the first story about HUD and this second story about the VA. If they were to open it up federally and take it off the schedule, as far as making it a maybe Schedule 2 narcotic or even further down Schedule 3, or just take it off the schedule altogether, that would open up all this research. That would open up this whole entire thing. But HUD or the VA, it doesn't seem like, are even coming close to relaxing their policies. I know they said there were some House bill and Senate bills trying to go through, some proposals to try to relieve some of this stress on the VA and maybe let VA doctors talk to their patients about cannabis. Because I have the same experience as far as listening to people that you have. It's a lot of kind of hit and miss in the VA. Some people can talk to their doctor about cannabis. Some people can't. Some people get punished. Some people don't.
I want to bring up further on this article on Politico, two different senators, one of them being Senator Brian Schatz, introduced an amendment to a must-pass defense spending bill that would have allowed VA physicians to recommend medical marijuana under state-regulated programs and bolster research. And despite bipartisan support, none of these proposals have reached a floor vote in the Senate either chamber. And I don't know if that's, you know, Mitch McConnell or what, but we have vested interests, Democrat and Republicans, in not seeing further cannabis, you know, progress on the federal level. We know that it might not hit the booze industry, but it hits the medical industry. They have trouble selling as much pills when cannabis is legal. And I think that's the main impediment to actually getting floor votes on this stuff. The congressman gets to say, oh, I support this, I support this, I support this. And then only one person has to be the jackass that keeps it from going to a floor vote. So they're all doing this on purpose. They're winning because they get to say they support it without actually doing anything to support or further it along.
Yeah, because the VA buys a lot of pills from Big Pharma. And so I think Big Pharma is running scared on cannabis. That's some of the issues that we have going forward is coming with Big Pharma. And like you were saying, the alcohol industry and also the prison industry doesn't want this going forward. So there's a lot of pushback on the federal level as far as making cannabis legal. I would hope that the Biden administration and the Democrats would sort of keep trying to overcome that, because there's another story. We're not going to talk about this. The GOP actually has introduced a legal cannabis bill in the Congress. So both sides are jumping on this. So maybe slowly but surely we'll get moving on this and see some change. And speaking of change, we have some fast change down in Texas, your neck of the wood, Dig. Texas judge made Delta 8 cannabis legal again. Pop quiz, Dig. What is Delta 8 THC?
All right. Delta 8 THC is derived from hemp or CBD flower. It's another cannabinoid that's a kind of different from Delta 9. It affects you slightly different. But the reason that it's become so interesting is because Delta 8, unlike hemp, Delta 8 gets you high, whereas CBD derived from hemp does not.
Yeah. And they're taking CBD, they're putting it through a chemical process, and they're coming out with Delta 8. And perfect answer there. I wanted to quiz you on that just because a lot of people, Delta 8 is sort of a new thing. And even there at the Texas Tribune article where this information came from, I wrote an article on, they wrote down the bottom and they actually corrected themselves about what Delta 8 is, and they totally blew the correction on exactly what it is. And so your answer is totally right there. And Texas kind of going back and forth on this. They made it illegal, now they made it legal. And they say the state is going to appeal, and there's a lot of other states that are making it illegal too. So we'll see, because just going back and forth on that. Just wanted to bring that up real quick about the Delta 8 is moving all over the place, all around the country, in Texas now. And actually, Dig, I was telling you, the only Delta 8 I've actually seen in front of me was from Texas.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are embracing it down there is because, you know, the state won't let them have real cannabis. And so this is kind of a next best thing, you know. They can't get real cannabis. They can't smoke weed, but they can smoke Delta 8, or they can take Delta 8. And now Texas is like, oh, wait, you found another way to use weed that we can't regulate. And they're still taxing. They're making a sales tax. Every one of these sales, you pay sales tax in Texas. Mm-hmm. So the state's still getting their money.
Yeah.
But that's not what this is about. This is about Texas suppressing freedom. And that's what Texas does. They give you like violent freedoms, like gun ownership and the ability to shoot people without much warning on your land. But you can't have, you know, peaceful freedom, like doing drugs or anything like that. That's how Texans like it. So they're going after it super hard. And either they'll win or they're not. But if they ban Delta 8 in Texas, maybe you'll finally see people that are on the fence about legalization in Texas get up off the couch and actually do something about it. Because there's a healthy cannabis culture in Texas, and they need to be politically active, or their state's never going to change.
Yeah, I don't know why Texas, and just like all these other states, but I don't know, because it's well known that right now people are driving back and forth between Texas and Colorado bringing large amounts of cannabis. And even back when I was living in Alabama back in the late 90s, it was known that we had a friend from Texas, and if we wanted to, we could have went to El Paso and got pounds of cannabis and all we wanted to, even back in the 90s. We never did. Yeah. And so Texas, just like all the – it's like Florida not making cannabis legal.
It's November in Oregon. You know how many southern license plates are out here right now? There's tons of Texas license plate every at the end of October through mid-November. All the out-of-staters come in their nice car and pick up their pounds and take it back home.
So they just need to open it up in Texas. The Delta 8 thing is going to go back and forth, but we're going to move on to our last story here. And this story is a little different than what we usually do, and it's kind of catered towards businesses, although I wanted to do the story because I just think that regular folks who use Instagram could learn some things off of these tips. And this is how not to get your Instagram shut down because you're putting cannabis content up on it. And you have an Instagram account, right, Dig?
I do. It's at Uncle Dig, and I've so far been able to keep it. And after we talk about these general tips, I'll tell people how I like to skirt the rules. So far, it's worked, but eventually I might get caught. So first of all, there's five tips you need to think about. And this is on any social media, right? This isn't just Instagram.
Not just Instagram,
You use Twitter, you use a lot of different things. I like Instagram because monkey love color. And if I have Twitter, I don't need access to people like Ted Cruz. That's not what I need in my life. So we focus – one tip one is focus on organic reach, especially at first. You may not know what you can get away with in paid advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
But if you focus on people that are already following you and interested in what you have to say, the likelihood of you getting reported and banned is less. So a lot of people blame the algorithm for getting banned. And that happens sometimes. But usually what happens is how you get banned is someone sees something you post, they get offended, and they say, hey, Facebook, or hey, Instagram, or hey, Twitter, this person's violating their terms of service. And then once that gets reported a couple times, then they take it down, then they ban you. Now, so if you're only focusing on your organic reach, i.e. people that are following you and not doing paid advertisement, a lot of times they know what you're about. That's why they're following you. So they're not going to get upset by something you post.
Yeah. Now, they're already into what you're doing.
Yeah, they're into if you're posting pictures of plants every once in a while, or you're posting bong rips every once in a while, that can cause you to get bans. But a lot of times it's because people are reporting you. Now, here's the big thing. Know your platform.
That's number two.
Yeah. Number two is know your platform. Every social media platform has different guidelines. Like this article says that Twitter is more friendly to the cannabis industry. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I have a Twitter account at MJ is Medicine. I started it a long time ago, and I just use it to share all my cannabis news and everything, and the show sometimes too. I've never had any kind of problem with it. Now I'm admitted, and I've said this before, I won't go on camera online for cannabis, so you won't find me on Twitter or anywhere else. But you need to know your platform, because Facebook has totally different things, and I think they're a little more strict than Instagram. Like, you'll get pop. Like, I know a lot of cannabis people on Facebook, but people mostly share all their cannabis stuff on Instagram. So
yeah,
I think TikTok might be a little friendlier too, because you do a little more live stuff there. So what's number three?
Number three is connect with your audience, right? Focus on connecting with your audience rather than selling them stuff, right? Like, so if you're selling a cannabis or a cannabis related product, that can get people like trying to ban you really quick. But if you're just doing outreach and just connecting with your audience and they happen to buy something from your site, no one can say you're doing, you know, direct sales on the platform, which could get you into some trouble.
Yeah.
Now, number four, this is very important. Be careful with your hashtags.
It's counterintuitive because it seems like you want to put your hashtags on there to draw people to you. But when you're bringing people to you, they're also bringing the people to the regulators to come look at your site too.
Right. So like, exactly. And so certain, like, so there are certain hashtags that are on are really risky, right? If you use hashtag weed, hashtag marijuana, hashtag 420, Instagram will flag that stuff and delete them really quickly.
Yep.
Sometimes.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like they can get all of them because I see those hashtags everywhere. So, like you said, I think that also depends on your platform. So those might go a little easier on Twitter.
I seem to have noticed that at least on Instagram, the larger your following is, the more likely you are to get banned, right? So like right now I have less than like 200 followers. I don't get banned very often. But as I got closer to 200, I would get banned more often. And I also noticed that people with larger followings that I follow tend to get banned more often. So like as you're more successful, it seems like the algorithm like sees you more. Now, the number five is kind of really important. And it's not something a lot of people think about. And that's plan your content. And this is interesting because a lot of the ways that you avoid the algorithm is you plan your content, right? So you're thinking, okay,
yeah.
So tomorrow I'm going to post a picture of one of my plants. So the next picture on your profile shouldn't be a plant picture, right? Or if it is a plant, confuse the algorithm. Take a picture of a tomatillo plant or a pepper plant you're growing. And then the next time, if you're going to do a bong rip video,
kind of mix it up.
Yeah, mix it up. Keep them on their toes. See, the people that I see getting banned a lot, like they do similar stuff over and over again. And it seems like whatever is like watching notices them more. Like if they do a bong rip from the same bong with the same background more than once, that algorithm is going to find you. But if you do a bong rip and then you post a plant video and then you post a video of like a bug and then you, you know, take a picture of the nutrients you're using, it seems like it's hard for them to lock down. Now, like I said, as your following grows, that may change. And of course, all of this is subject to the evolving whims of Facebook and Twitter's AI.
Yeah. And I'm no, computer scientist, but I think those algorithms, they want to categorize everything. And so if you start putting two of the same thing up, it's like, oh, there's two of that. And then you get three of that and four of that. And it's going, oh, what is this? And it looks, puts it to a person and block. So, but do you, a lot of these don't go through people. It's just the algorithm knowing that that is a weed plant, the AI saying, oh, that's a weed plant and block, or that's a bong block. So, very interesting times we're living in with these major companies and cannabis. Like I said, I still have not been on camera as far as being on YouTube. I've thought about doing a YouTube with sometimes when I grow, but I just haven't really got up the nerve to do it. It just, I don't know. It's just for me, putting myself on the camera with a plant, a cannabis plant, just I'm like, I'm still kind of sketched out by it. But I feel like I got to get over that, Dig.
Well, I mean, maybe whenever you and I do have a visit in person next, maybe we can I can set up the phone and we can do a bong rip video or something if you want.
Yeah, on your Instagram. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we will.
Guest appearance. And then it wouldn't even be tied to your account. Just be somebody on mine.
Yeah, I might have to take you up on that. It might be fun.
Yeah.
And now let's get on to our interview, Dig. And we are back on the Cannabis Corner. I'm Lucas Barfield, and our co-host Dig is out today. And we are joined by Michelle Jun and Lisa Coates, and we are going to talk today about cannabis extracting using CO2 and women in cannabis and what these folks are doing together. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here too. It's a Thursday. I like my Thursdays are one of my favorite days of the week.
Yeah, I really like Thursday too. It's kind of getting warmed up for Friday and you're looking towards the weekend, so you kind of got a little momentum. Before we get started into some of our topics, tell us how did you get into the cannabis industry and what you are doing with cannabis today?
My story is not as exciting, so I'll get myself out of the way and then let Lisa take center stage. But I'm Michelle Jun. I'm the head of sales for Greenmill Supercritical. We make supercritical CO2 extraction systems, state-of-the-art stuff. But what got me into cannabis was my relationship with the plant. It was totally life-changing. You know, got rid of, you know, any need for antidepressants, anti-anxiety, just a huge improvement in my quality of life, even helps with some of my pain management. So naturally, being who I am, I kind of found a way and stuck myself into the industry and can't ever picture leaving.
That's great, Michelle. My name is Lisa, and I am a co-owner at product manufacturing business in Kenai, Alaska. And we've been open for about 3 years now. We primarily do CO2 extraction, and our primary product is vape cartridges. And my whole life I worked in the corporate world, and mainly the petroleum industry, and it's pretty prevalent around here where I live. So I was a blue collar worker working in a lab 25, 30 years, analytical chemistry and whatnot. And when cannabis became legal up here, I thought this was an opportunity of a lifetime. It's a plant I love, and for some reason I just had a real passion for it, and it just it felt natural to try and do something. If I didn't do it, I felt like I may regret it. And so I took a big leap of faith. And what's interesting, and one of the things that kind of got me more interested in it, or the ability to do it, is its unique state. Alaska doesn't allow outside investment, so no big money can come into this state to open a business. And so I had to court my friends and families and strangers to invest in me and believe in me and trust in me that we could build this, and we did.
I want to start with you, Michelle. For our audience out there, a lot of people go to the stores and they see the different things they have, like butane extraction, you have alcohol extraction, then you have CO2 extraction, and you have the dry extractions and all that other stuff. But tell us exactly what goes into CO2 extraction from someone who actually manufactures the machines.
Yeah, so CO2 extraction is probably the most like tunable and versatile of all of those that you mentioned. Not to mention, it's probably the safest too. I mean, our plants eat CO2 as part of their process of growing, and we use that to actually extract out the oil. And so, you know, CO2 goes into those cell walls in the plant and carries out everything that you want to see in the vape, and can do it really selectively. Let's take alcohol extraction, you know, or butane. You can have some selectability, but you still get a lot of things that you don't want, just because the solvent itself isn't capable of being sort of picky about what it's doing. And so, you know, it really, to the end consumer, you know, when you go into that shop and you buy CO2 oil, you're pretty much guaranteed a much safer process of extraction. And then, you know, from that extraction, you go into post-processing, and there's some creativity there too. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of it.
I'm really glad you're on the show. I have really wanted to have somebody who was actually on the ground doing cannabis extraction for a while. We talk a lot about the cannabis plan and all the different parts of it. And both my co-host and I are both medical cannabis growers and like to grow outdoors and talk about all the various things about the plant. So tell us, like, at your lab, you have like a pound of cannabis. What all goes into prepping it for CO2 extraction, and what does that actually look like in your lab?
Good question. And it's interesting because we give a lot of tours to people, and they're just blown away because I don't know what they imagine it should look like. But essentially, we run about a batch of cannabis through the Green Mills extractor. We run around 4 pounds. So we take 4 pounds of trim or flower and grind it up in a giant weed whacker, basically, for 15 seconds. So it's all nicely fine ground cannabis. And then we pack it into a big, large vessel of the Green Mills and run that CO2 through at a different recipes. It's a very cookbooky kind of process. It takes about, for us, because we post-process with winterization, and Green Mills has an add-on to the extractor that we, I I dream about having, so we didn't have, don't have to do this post-processing, but and we remove the fats and, you know, we get all the good stuff out of the extractor, but we need to get rid of the items that we don't want, like the waxes and the lipids and salts and stuff. And so it's called a post-processing, is a winterization is what they call it, using some ethanol and a freezer and a lot of different filters and rotovaping to get off that ethanol again. We chose CO2 for a reason similar to Michelle, I guess, but for me, it was the safety of it. It's not butane. I didn't have to have an explosion-proof facility. And I felt, and being from the petroleum industry, I think the future is not petroleum. And so I thought CO2 is embracing a cleaner, safer for the earth and safer for us. Because it's amazing to think that this gas performs as a solvent. And then what's amazing in that extractor is when it's done extracting it, it wants to drop off. It's got all these, you've got that CO2 carrying all the goodness and waxes and lipids, all these things, and you warm it up a little bit and that CO2 turns into a vapor and just drops all that stuff out. And when you look at the extracted spent cannabis that's left in the extraction vessel, I mean, it looks like it did when it went in there, except it's a slightly faded color. But there's no stickiness to it. It's clean. And so it's a fascinating process. And like Michelle said, the tunability is great.
Yeah, thank you for those really great descriptors. Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit about fine-tuning the CO2 extraction. Tell us a little bit about how that can actually help your product stand out a little more than, let's say, some of the other products on the market.
I would say we're a craft batch extractor. We're not producing and running hundreds of pounds a day. It seems to be, there's a lot of businesses that do that sort of thing, but especially because we don't have the outside investment, but that's okay. It's such a sustainable industry here in Alaska. Our goal is to really match the profile of that strain, cannabis strain, the best we can. And in order to do that, we have to run a single strain batch. Another manufacturer may put 20 different strains and just mix it all together to make like a distillate or something, because it's not going to end up being a full spectrum product anyway. And so our goal is to be full spectrum and match that plant profile as best we can. And it can be a challenge. In Alaska, we basically only analyze for potency and terpenes, but our terpenes are only about 20 terpenes that are tested for. But we know there's over 100 terpenes. There's terpenoids, flavonoids, all the good stuff in that flower or plant itself. And so we are doing our best to try and capture that. And it feels good when we can take a grower who loves that strain and has pride in it, has maybe won awards for it, and we can extract it and make an oil and let that grower try that oil, and they're like, man, you match that. It tastes like that plant. That feels good.
Yeah, it is really nice to go and get some extract, and it's really closely related to the plant and the strain. It's not always easy to find those. So really great job there. What are you guys working on together? How are you partnering together, Green Mill Supercritical Extraction and Lisa's business there in Alaska? What are some of the things you guys are collaborating on?
Sure. Before I get into some of the ways that we work together, actually, Lisa, I don't want you to downplay yourself. When she's talking about, you know, really giving you the full experience as close to that plant as possible and really showing respect to these growers out there. I mean, she has award-winning vape products and other, you know, other products too in their lineup that really just drive that quality factor way higher than, you know, a lot of brands that currently exist that are, you know, kind of just okay with getting by. And so it's been really exciting to see, you know, what they're capable of with such a small team. They do some really, really excellent stuff. So I definitely wanted to give you a shout out there. But as you know, as far as what we work on together, Lisa and her team are responsible for, you know, everything that they're doing there. What Greenmill does a really great job of, though, I think, is supporting them and understanding how to utilize the system that we've manufactured for them. So understanding, you know, what pressure change is going to make what effect down the road, and can we get this color, you know, lighter, or can we pull more terpenes, and, you know, how can we adjust our recipes? And so that's really where I think, you know, our relationship kind of takes off, is through that method development and formulating those recipes. But when you get that product on the shelf, when you go into a, you know, a dispensary and you buy an Urban Extracts pen, that's the hard work that Lisa and her team have put, you know, into that product, and on the back end, mixing it all together and putting it in final form. So kudos to you guys.
Thanks for that, Michelle. That means a lot. And yeah, in Greenmill's, like with Michelle and their team, it's been a great experience. We ran a different extractor, you know, for the past 3 years. So we've only been running the Greenmill's for a few months, but the support from them and the willingness to tweak it and do this, you know, and it's like, hey, you know, we should be getting a little bit better yield from this strain, and or we're missing some of the flavors, but we don't know what they are because the testing isn't up to snuff, but we know it's not there. Can we do, you know, what would you suggest we do? And so it's been that's our process where we're at right now, is just they're helping us fine tune what we need. And it's been great. The support has been wonderful.
Yeah, great to hear about that collaboration in the cannabis industry. I want to ask you a question, Lisa. I spent a little time in Alaska. I know there's like a famous ratio, men to women ratio in Alaska is really low, and it's always known kind of like a manly state, you know, all the trappers and miners up there and everything. So what is it like running, and then in the cannabis industry, we of course have well-publicized reports about less women ownership, less women workers in the cannabis industry. So what is it like running an all-women cannabis business there in Alaska?
Man, it's a lot of fun. we're all women. I do, my partner, co-owner, he's involved a little bit. He's like, he does our deliveries and stuff like that. So I don't want to slight him. I couldn't do it without him. But for the majority of the day in our building, we are all women, and we kick ass. You know, the rumor or the myth or legend, whatever you want to call it, of the Alaska men and stuff, and that they're tough and burly and all that, and they are. But the women are too. So we have a lot of strong women in this state, and I couldn't do it without my team. It's definitely a team effort. And I enjoy working with women in this industry, that they're growers, manufacturers, retail owners, and transportation. And one of the things, as I talk with other women in the industry, we all love working with each other. It's very refreshing, because the women that are in this industry are strong women. They're organized. Their egos aren't huge. And it's amazing to see. And it's nice to be able to set an example in this community, because this community is blue collar, mainly petroleum workers, where women graduate and they get married, have kids while they're husband goes to work in the oil field. They get to, you know, it's textbook stuff here. And it feels good to set an example of it. You can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that's been my experience here in Washington. We have a really strong Women of Washington Normal chapter, and I've met some really strong women in the cannabis industry and what you were just speaking about. And I think you guys spoke to this before when you were talking about how you guys, a lot of times women collaborate so well together. Michelle, I wanted to ask you real quick. You are in the STEM industry and the cannabis industry. So have you seen... some of the same benefits in the STEM industry as far as working with other women, and do you see like a some crossover issues between the cannabis industry and women working in STEM?
So it's interesting. No matter what I've ever done in my career, it's always been like a boys' game, right? The good old boys' club. And I think that cannabis has been really exciting because I definitely see the same challenges, but we get kind of a fresh start. And so the women that I meet aren't nearly, I think, as beaten down because we have an opportunity to just forge the path ourselves. I was just having this conversation yesterday where it's like, you know, they were like, do you feel like a pioneer? And I was like, you know, I've never like used that word, but yeah, I mean, when we installed the system at Lisa's operation, it was all female. Even our technician here, our service manager, her name's Elise. She's female. And we went in, and Lisa's right. We kicked butt. And, you know, it's just, it's really exciting to be part of an example of this. Cause you know, you see a lot of marketing around, you know, equal opportunity, or diversity or inclusion, but to be a part of it and to see it in practice and to see a company like Lisa's become so successful, creating this just incredible product out there. It's kind of cool. And you know, I can compare it to my time in the military. That was not as cool and it was not as fun. And I did, you know, I was a pioneer, but it certainly didn't feel as positive. So I think that cannabis has been, you know, a really, really excellent opportunity for a lot of us to, you know, do what we deserve to do, which is have an equal seat at the table, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I would like to mention too, as far as strong, Michelle, we enjoyed having it. So we were so excited to hear that it was just been coming up. You know, we were high-fiving it like, yes, you know, we're killing it. And even my extractor, she is also a licensed grower too. So I snagged her when I was like, man, I like how she operates. And when I had an opening, I was like, you want to learn how to do this? And she went for it because she's just like, she's a badass. It's like, why not? You know? So we figured it out and rock it, kill it. Yeah.
So Lisa, I wanted to ask you real quick, tell us, what are some of the things on the horizon in Alaska as far as cannabis goes? I mean, it's, I do a lot of cannabis writing and reporting, and Alaska's not really in the news a lot. I know they kind of had a slow start getting going and everything, but what are some exciting things going on in cannabis right now in Alaska?
Yeah, we don't get a whole lot of coverage because they just don't see us as a huge marketplace. There's not enough people. And like this time of year, half the people are gone if they can be. It's cold and dark. It's a snowstormy day today, and nobody wants to be here. But we keep chugging along up here. We're all passionate about cannabis, just like the rest of the country and the world. The recent thing, but we also have to fight for everything that we want. We recently got the edible limit raised from 50 milligrams a package to 100 milligrams and 10 mils a serving.
Okay.
And on-site consumption is, it actually, we have a couple places now in the state where you can go and try cannabis in a public setting. And so that seems to be maybe a little bit growing more. People see that as tourism and because tourism, of course, is huge and sport fishing. But cannabis tourism is going to be a big deal here. And so I see that growing and growing. The state struggles with regulations because I do think they kind of still see it. There's still a stigma attached to it, and they, you know, it's attached to politics, and so that gets a little disheartening. But we all persevere and try to have a voice in shaping the future of cannabis in the state. I'm hoping You know, a big worry for us up here is what happens when it becomes legal nationwide, and how that affects the current businesses here, knowing that we don't have big deep pockets, and can you keep out the Walmart of weed, that sort of thing. But so that's where we're at. And we're also trying to change the tax structure of cannabis. It seems to be a little unfairly how they tax cannabis, but yeah. But, you know, little changes. It's baby steps, right? Progress.
Yeah, there's a lot of those changes are having to go on all over the country. And but Alaska came on early. They were one of the, I think, the round right after Washington and Colorado. I think Alaska was right on board the next round with Oregon, I think. So really great to have Alaska coming along. And you're over in Pittsburgh, Michelle. Do you think PA is going to have adult use cannabis this year?
I certainly hope so.
So we are going to get out of here. Thank you guys so much for the interview. And I wanted to let you leave the show and tell us about your website and how people can get in touch with you and anything exciting coming up that you would like our audience to know about.
Well, you can find us at greenmillsupercritical.com. We also have a YouTube channel if you want to watch me walk through a system for you. And then you can always reach out via email, too. It's just Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, at greenmillsupercritical.com.
Yeah, and I have to say, their YouTube channel is great. Michelle Minutes are classic. We like them. we love them. And our website, we're Urban Extracts. Our website's 907maryjane.com. And I think on Facebook, we're Urban Extracts Alaska, as well as on Instagram. And you can, our email address is 907maryjane@gmail.com.
Thank you so much to Michelle and Lisa for being on the show. Don't forget to go over there and check out their websites. All right. So we are back on the Cannabis Corner with our final segment, and that is our It's a Bus segment. And last week we were in Tennessee, and unfortunately this week we are staying in the South. And in this segment, we like to highlight the drug war, and we are definitely not doing anything like a dumb criminal segment here. We are highlighting the drug war and the overreach of police and the fact that drugs are everywhere in our society, and there's a lot of poor people getting arrested for cannabis. There's a lot of purposes to this segment, but I have to tell you, Dig, this fellow in Louisiana just seemed like he maybe could have handled things a little bit different and not got arrested. So tell us what happened to this poor guy.
Okay, so this is in West Monroe, Louisiana. First things first, you know, he gets pulled over, right? Apparently, he was committing multiple traffic violations. We don't know if that's true. Officers, you know, can stop you for any reason.
Yep.
So according to this young man, he was in a rush to pick up a friend from a local nightclub. Now, they had had him exit his vehicle because they said that they smelled cannabis.
Yep.
Now, they may have, judging on what they found in the car, but here's what they found. They found, also, officers were given consent to search the car. The dude admitted to having a little bit of cannabis in a backpack and that he was probably going to jail. Ladies and gentlemen, I would advise you never to consent to a search. And I would also advise you never admit to anything and don't say, I'm probably going to jail. You can plead the fifth and make it a little harder on them, please. Officers found 10 grams of cannabis, a clear plastic bag with 226 grams of mushrooms, a small clear bag with 6.5 grams of mushrooms, a box of clear plastic bags, a marijuana pipe, and a scale. Also, there was a bag located in the back seat containing 25 bags of THC edibles, two scales, and a loose cash in the center console of the vehicle. This dude was charged with possession of drug paraphernalia, possession of a controlled dangerous substance, and two counts of possession with intent to distribute a controlled dangerous substance, which I'm sure is a felony in Louisiana. Ladies and gentlemen, please, if you are going to use cannabis while you are driving in the South, I advise you not to do that, first of all. But if you must, one joint is all you need. This is way too much to be driving around the South with, ever.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I don't think I ever had 232 grams of dried mushrooms, but we used to have a fair amount of mushrooms when we find them in the cow fields and stuff, and we would take them straight home and leave them there. It's really important that we understand, and this is what kind of fascinates me about this story, and it's very disturbing, although that you see all over the news, and I get emails, the Today Show highlights psilocybin research. Psilocybin better for depression than pharmaceuticals. You see these headlines all over the place. Oh, cannabis, yeah. Medical cannabis getting legalized, cannabis. It's just on and on, all these things. And it appears like the drug war is loosening up, but it is absolutely not. And this is just amazing to me that all these things that you can go on the Today Show and talk about how psilocybin is helping you. I mean, they had a guy up here in Seattle. I don't know his name, and I wish him all the luck. They're trying to get a initiative in Seattle to legalize psilocybin up there, and I hope they get it going. But, you know, he's on TV admitting he's growing mushrooms and all this stuff, and I think that's great, but it just gives the impression like the police are loosening up, and in the South, you have to be really, really careful. Like you said, you want to just travel with a joint because the police, they don't care about any kind of research. They don't care about any of that. They're just trying to get this violent criminal off the streets.
They don't care that it helps you. They don't care that it's pretty much safe. And listen, they know. Listen, everybody knows, even the people that want it illegal, cannabis is not that big a deal. They want an excuse to harass you and to kidnap you and take you to jail at their discretion. That's what they want. They want power and they want control.
Yeah, we get back to this inequality where some people are getting arrested some places and some people are not getting arrested other places. And it's this whole entire patchwork, and it's, you know, part of our political system. But, you know, the drug war is still raging out there, and that's why we do this It's a Buzz segment. And I have to tell you, Dig, I almost sent a pitch off to my editor about this, because this same day I found this story, there were three other stories about people getting busted with large amounts of mushrooms. And so I think people are seeing these headlines and being like, hey, I could get some mushrooms and help my friends out and I could have them. And it's not loosening it up like people think it is. So be really careful out there if you're dealing with these things. The police are still out there. And I was actually quite disturbed about how many headlines I saw that day on this topic. And it's still the drug war still going on.
Yeah, and you got to remember, folks, the police lie, and they have people that are in these networks, and we don't know who they are. And so, like, just be aware, and, you know, don't talk out of school, because here's the thing: cannabis and mushrooms and stuff like that in large parts of this country are still 5-year felonies. Please be careful out there. Please be smart. Please know your rights. Never consent to a search.
All right. So that is going to bring our show to an end. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can contact me at info@radiotacoma.org. Put Cannabis Corner in the subject line there. And we are going to be coming out with a podcast soon, and some other things going to be going on with the show. And that is really exciting coming up for the new year. But tell us right now, Dig, how can people get in touch with you off of the show?
Oh, yeah. You can follow me on Instagram @UncleDig. If you want to get in touch with me via email, it's UncleDig4@gmail.com. And if you want to come to Bong Rips with me on Instagram and see sometimes what I've got going on in my garden, you can follow me on Instagram or listen to my podcast, The Bag Seed Chronicles. And you can find that wherever you get podcasts.
This is Cannabis Corner, hosted by Lucas Barfield. If you would like to get in contact with your host, he is on Twitter at MJIsMedicine. Your musical selection is The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson and his orchestra, recorded on 78 in 1947. You can find this music and much more at The Great 78 Project, an archive of historical music recordings at great78.archive.org. You are listening to 101.9 KTAH Radio Tacoma. Thank you.